Hello, and welcome to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. This is where we look at various nutrition and fitness-related topics through the lens of application. We want to give you practical takeaways so that you can create your healthiest, best self backed by knowledge. Now, onto the episode with your host, Coach Lisa.
Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm going to do a Q&A. Before we get into the episode, though, if you enjoy the show, please do me a favor and subscribe, rate it, or share it on your social media. It is the best way to help me grow. So first of all, just a little update, personal update. I have just come back from Brazil from a wonderful trip for a friend's wedding down there. She's actually also German. I went to school with her, but her now husband is Brazilian, and they met in Canada studying, so I'm not the only globetrotter. But yeah, it was wonderful, but also kind of exhausting. So I am actually very happy to be back home here in Bogota and just to settle a little bit into routine again. Nonetheless, I think, again, as I've said before, like breaking out of these comfort zones on a regular basis is so worthwhile. Every time before I go on a trip and people in our research group or that I talk to regularly, like our coaches and stuff, they will know that I always say, I really don't want to go. I don't feel like going on XYZ trip or like doing this change. And then afterwards, I don't just come back with amazing memories. I also am so happy that I've done it because it gives me a whole new appreciation for what I have here or for regularity, for a routine. So also an encouragement to you to embrace those things where initially you might be thinking, oh no, it's going to require a lot of effort or it's going to be hard to stick with my routine. And the more we practice that, and it's actually one of the questions that I'm going to address today, but the more we practice following a routine out of our usual environment, the more natural it's going to feel as well. That's not to say that there were no challenges throughout this trip in the sense of sometimes not having the foods available that I wanted to, sometimes something getting delayed, sometimes, you know, struggling with digestion or feeling very fatigued. After a couple of days, I developed a little bit of a cold or like a snotty sort of nose, just from the air conditioning that I'm not used to. So I traveled from here to São Paulo, which is a 6-hour flight, and then another hour and a half flight or so to a smaller city called Londrina in the on the inside of the country, or not on the coast anyway. And it is like 35 degrees Celsius there, which means about 100 most of the time. So everything is air conditioned, but they air condition it down to like 66 or 70. And so those constant changes, I'm just not used to that. Here in Bogota, we have a very constant temperature all the time, which I actually love. I never thought I would. I always thought I loved the change of the seasons or I loved the heat the most. But I am so here, it's much more steady. It's like sort of in the 70s basically all the time. But anyway, so I got there 2-3 days before the wedding. I packed all my food for the plane rides because no food was included on that cheap airline. There was a very shitty cable machine at the hotel, so I ended up going to two different gyms. One of them wasn't open on the weekend, so the first one that I went to was actually amazing, and I loved it because it had a hack squat machine and also a reverse hack squat machine, you know, where you kind of like face the hack squat. I love both of those. I feel like it takes away a lot of the pressure from my spine that I usually get with regular squats. So I wish my gym had that. But I guess it gives me more appreciation for when I do get to do some drop-ins. The other gym I had to go to after that was called Smart Fit. It's sort of like your 24-hour fitness thingy, although it wasn't open 24 hours, but that was the only other one close by that was open on the weekend. So it was, yeah, it's always what I miss when I drop in other gyms is just having like a weight belt, which I usually don't travel with. And sometimes, or well, on this trip also, I traveled with just carry-on luggage, which meant I had sneakers, one pair of sneakers, which are not necessarily the best for leg day. I had flip-flops and I had high heels for the wedding. And that was literally it. So yeah, after 10 days or so of the same clothes and just traveling with so little equipment, you do miss a few things, even as a minimalist. but anyway, it was such a lovely wedding, particularly also because we got to spend a lot of time with the bride and groom. So there were several people that flew in from abroad, even someone from New Zealand, some people from Canada, some from Germany, of course. But most of us were staying in the same hotel, and therefore we even, like, I didn't really know anybody aside from the mother of the bride beforehand. But we all stayed in the same hotel, and we like kind of got to know each other leading up to the wedding. And the bride and the groom were staying there too, since they don't live in Brazil usually. So we all met up for like breakfast and meals, and some of them even explored and did some daytime activities outside of that. But I, you know, worked or did my own thing. I always need a little bit of alone time also. but yeah, that was lovely. And the wedding itself was amazing, even though there was a bit of rain and the actual ceremony was delayed like 2.5 hours. The actual, or like, that meant that during the ceremony there was a beautiful sunrise and they got such wonderful footage and pictures. So, you know, sometimes things don't go as planned, sometimes they go even better. And then after that, I traveled to the Iguazu Falls, which is a really high waterfall, higher and wider than the Niagara Falls. And at the Brazil border to Argentina, very close to Paraguay as well. So one side of the falls belongs to Argentina, one side of the falls belongs to Brazil. And I did like a day tour and visited both of them. So if you ever consider traveling to Brazil or have been to Brazil, this is something like, it honestly felt like a once in a lifetime experience. And then from there, I finished off the trip with a couple of days on the coast on an island called Florianópolis, or Floripa, as some people call it as well. And I felt like I only just scratched the surface of that. It felt so much like a digital nomad hotspot, kind of like Bali and so on. But, you know, a bit pricier because of that. Nonetheless, all in all, a wonderful trip. And I most certainly would not have enjoyed it in that same way. So I've been to Brazil in 2008, and I do remember having some thoughts around like food restrictions, and you know, they eat very high carb, high fat, as of course most countries do, but like with their barbecues, with their pão de queijo, which is like cheese bread type of thing. And there are so many like traditional things I would not have enjoyed without flexible dieting. So truly grateful for that. And I apologize for the 6-minute rant here to start things off. I hope you're still with me. But I'm going to get into the questions now. I just wanted to give you a life update. So anyway, let's get into the first question. The question is, I have a surgery coming up and I'm, well, A, nervous about it, and B, concerned about my recovery time. Is there anything nutritionally that I can do in order to help my body get through this? So this, I guess, not in regards to training or anything like that, in regards to nutrition. I like that question, and that this person is wanting to optimize things through nutrition, because there is actually a lot of things we can do. So first point would be, I would potentially increase protein to like 1.2 grams per pound of body weight, just because proteins literally are the building blocks of our body. They are, you know, what our tissues are made up of. So regardless of what kind of surgery this is, it would probably only help with wound healing. And the other thing you could potentially do is just swapping some carbs for fats, not necessarily leading up to the surgery, since I assume this person can still be active leading up to the surgery, but potentially on the day of the surgery and afterwards, just because fats, we can often implement more anti-inflammatory things. That doesn't mean you should go super low carbs, still, you know, trying to get your fiber in and veggies and so on, but potentially swapping some carbs for fats so that you have more room to play for things like that are very anti-inflammatory, like salmon or nuts olive oil, avocado, and so on. And I would most certainly make sure not to be in a deficit going into the surgery. Being in a calorie deficit is a stressor for the body. And then even going out, even if you are not very active afterwards, I wouldn't, at least not right away, drop calories a lot. Your hunger is probably going to reduce anyway. So of course, I wouldn't necessarily like force feed, but potentially your body is going to send you signals that you should eat just the same, if not more. I have read some studies where energy demands actually went up by like 15% post-surgery, although people were bedridden basically. So don't think you need to drop down your calorie intake to something ridiculous like just your basal metabolic rate or anything like that. Of course, if you're out of the game in terms of training and movement for more than 2-3 weeks, then you can drop them down a little bit more, your calories, not below metabolic rate, but below, you know, maintenance. However, it really does take some time for our muscle to start atrophy. So don't stress about that too much and just see how you feel. On the point of anti-inflammatory foods, as I was making with omegas and so on, you could also increase your omega-3 supplementation just to help your body deal with the stress. You could also increase ashwagandha, another an adaptogen that helps the body with stress management. Something else that helps the body with stress management and immune function, zinc, of course, vitamin C we could increase. You could also increase glutamine, L-glutamine, and another amino acid, which is also great for wound healing. And of course, just really remembering to drink a lot because that helps flush the body out as well. So those would be my recommendations. That was question number one. Now let's move on to the next question. Also travel. So we have two travel-related ones, I guess. I'm going to an all-inclusive resort in April, and while I'm excited about it, I am also concerned to lose some of the progress I have made in my recent cut, which I'm still in. Do you have any recommendations so that I don't come back with 5 or 10 pounds heavier as I have in the past? Ooh, okay. I mean, all-inclusive resorts are always tricky because mentally we think because it's quote-unquote free, I mean, you paid for it ahead of time, it doesn't mean you have to eat it. It's just like when something's on your plate, it doesn't mean you have to eat it. But of course, we kind of want to make the most out of things. We want to enjoy. We want to try a little bit here and there. So it's much harder to stick with particular meal times. It's much harder to limit yourself. So I totally get that. I'm going to start the day or the recommendations from the beginning of the day. I would recommend starting your day with movement just because I assume this resort is probably in a warm spot. So the warmer it gets, usually the less likely we are to do our exercise throughout the day, even if it is an air-conditioned gym or so. And if you want to take it as an actual deload week from strength training, you can do so. I wouldn't necessarily say you'd have to, depending on the gym that you have there. But, you know, start it with 45 minutes or an hour of any kind of movement. So it could be a walk on the beach. It could be a walk on the treadmill. It could just be maybe they're offering like a yoga class or something, but some sort of movement so that you also feel better about just being kind of lazy over the rest of the day. Then when it comes to meals themselves, I would always breakfast, lunch, and dinner see that you can start with protein and fiber. So that first plate, even if you might go back for seconds or so, but make that first plate high in protein, high in fiber, and see that you can limit added fats as best as possible. So perhaps they have an omelet station. You could ask for a very dry egg white omelet. So really making sure that they're using minimal oils, or maybe even asking them to steam it. Some places can do that or do that. You could also just see if they poach eggs, which is a more secure way of knowing that no fat went into the omelet. However, of course, then you have less protein through egg whites and more fats from the egg yolk, but still would be an option. Of course, get some veggies, get some fruit. And when it comes to the other things, so let's say waffles, breads, whatever sweet thing they might have there. First reminder, I would set myself is, what things can I have on a daily basis or any time that I want to? So, you know, maybe you want to save the calories on that slice of whole wheat bread because there's really nothing special about that. Or even in regards to like the waffles or the cereal, like what can I really have any day? Is there something on that buffet or menu that I usually can't have or can't make myself and I would really like to try? So there, then, you know, filling up maybe like taking a small serving of that if it's a buffet and just trying a little bit. And this might be not a popular statement to make, but when it comes to buffets, I like to remind people and myself that it's totally okay to leave stuff on the plate. That doesn't mean you should grab some of everything and have a bite and then leave plates and plates of mounted leftover food going to waste. No. But if you tried something, you thought you would like it, and you take a couple of bites and you're like, eh, this is really not worth my calories, I'm just going to leave that. That is 100% fine. Yes, I know that there are people out there starving that would love that food, but you're not helping them by eating that food. On the contrary, you're making yourself feel horrible. Probably, like, if you know, if you overeat or if you eat stuff where later on you regret it, you're the only person suffering from it. So just try to take that into consideration. Now, when it comes to treats in general or sweet things, in order to increase the satiation or keep you more satiated and reduce the cravings later on, I would still set myself a little bit of a treat limit for the day. So kind of like, okay, if I have a dessert with my lunch, I'm not going to have one with my dinner. Or if I have those sweet waffles now, I'm not going to go and get ice cream with my kids later in the day. They can have ice cream, obviously. I'm just not going to have any. So, you know, while that might sound restrictive in a place where everyone is just like, oh, let's do whatever because nothing here counts, having those rough guidelines for yourself, make sure that you still enjoy day 6 and 7, and particularly the day that you come home also, just as much as you did the first day. I don't know how long this person is staying at this resort, but I assume several days. So here also the note of like pacing yourself. They're probably going to have the same stuff for breakfast most days. So just take into consideration that you can try something different every single day, potentially also instead of thinking you have to make the most of it in one single sitting. And with regards to the treat limit, I would also instill an alcohol limit if you have something with an alcohol package there, just because that's basically empty calories also. That's going to make you want to eat more. So I think for me, personally, although I wouldn't buy an alcohol package with anything like that anyway, but if that is included, you know, setting yourself a bit of a guideline there could be helpful. So anyway, I hope you enjoy it and don't stress about it too much. The other thing I forgot to say is I would most certainly bring up calories to maintenance at least a couple of weeks beforehand so that it's not as much of a shock to your body and your body doesn't send you all the hunger signals whilst you're away and then you wanting to eat even more. Question number 3, what supplements are you currently taking? Just curious. Okay. So nothing extraordinary, super extraordinary. I am taking creatine daily about 3. I don't take quite the full scoop, so it's like 3 grams or 4 grams. I take a magnesium. I actually take a blend of magnesium citrate and bisglycinate. I take a vitamin D. I take, what else, a selenium to help support my thyroid because I don't eat Brazil nuts regularly. I have tried doing that and I kind of didn't stick with it, so I am just supplementing with it. I am also finishing off my myo-inositol, which I started taking for my egg freezing process last month. There's nothing no particular reason why I think I need to continue with it other than me just wanting to finish it off. And I mean, it's good for cell energy and blood glucose regulation anyway. Since I started taking it, I didn't necessarily feel a difference in anything, so I'm not going to continue past this point. Same with CoQ10, which is meant to help with fertility also, but just finishing that off essentially. Then I'm taking a few things to help support, I guess, my body deal with stress and training better, so ashwagandha, zinc, and I'm actually also taking glutamine to help with my, like, gut lining and everything else, so just digestion a little bit. In the past, I have taken calcium before. I am, at the moment, regularly hitting my calcium target without supplementing, so I'm not doing that. I have also taken iron and vitamin B12 or B complex before, which I'm not doing at the moment either because I regularly eat organ meats, so I don't feel like I need it. Yeah, but that's kind of it. Next question. The bloating, or I generally get bloated throughout the day and it increases. So I wake up in the morning feeling fine, but every time I eat, I feel like my belly grows. What can I do? We should distinguish between like how lean you feel in the morning and the evening. It's perfectly normal to not feel as lean as the day goes on just from you having food in your stomach. But, of course, there's a difference between not feeling lean and being bloated. So I assume that this person means it's more like literally like, you know, you've probably seen some pictures on Instagram where people with IBS or SIBO or so post pictures of like, oh, this is me in the morning. And then the evening it looks like they have swallowed a balloon and they're, you know, super, super bloated. So if that is the case and you feel gassy, you really feel like it's increasing every time you eat, then it would be worth paying specific attention to what you're eating. Of course, looking at some common offenders at first, so like how many artificial sweeteners are you consuming? That can be through gum, that can be through diet sodas, that can be through protein bars, through protein powders. So look at that. Oftentimes it's not just like artificial sweeteners in general. It can also just be a specific sweetener that doesn't agree with you. Next common things would be things like gluten, dairy, beans. And with many of these things, it's also not a hard and fast rule as in, oh my gosh, I need to cut out dairy completely or gluten completely or so. It often goes down to quantity and also the way that it's prepared. So less so with gluten, but more so with dairy and things like beans or even cruciferous vegetables or raw vegetables. So a lot of people don't tolerate raw vegetables quite as well as cooked ones. Or you might be fine with like 4 ounces of broccoli, but you're not fine with 6 or 8. So like it really, really depends sometimes. And with regards to the dairy, a lot of people are fine when it's like fermented or like yogurt or kefir or even cheese, but not so fine with actual dairy milk. So just pay attention to what you're eating. So it could really be worth doing an elimination diet. I'm not a fan of food intolerance tests, especially if they're just like, hey, send us a hair of pull out a hair of your on your skull and send it to us and we'll tell you what you're intolerant to. So yeah, there's really not a lot of evidence supporting those kind of tests. I would much more go on I guess a little bit of an elimination tour myself. You could do things like low FODMAP for a little bit if you think that it's specific vegetables. Even a carnivore diet has its place when it comes to elimination diets. So yeah, that would be the point. Also making sure you're not necessarily drinking too much with your meals because that can sometimes interfere with absorption and digestion as well. Making sure that you're kind of eating in a relaxed state. Stress is one of the most impactful things for things like IBS or SIBO or just anything when it comes to digestion. So really trying to consume your food when you're sitting down and somewhat relaxed at least. Next question. How do I measure progress in the gym? I keep putting in the effort, but I truly don't know if it's paying off. This person is also not giving me a whole lot of details when it comes to their actual goals, which would be the most important thing to determine here. Because, of course, if we're trying to get stronger, then it's fairly easy to see, like, what are you progressing? Are you able to put more plates on the bar or machine? Or are you able to do more reps? If so, yes, you're getting stronger. But I guess the point with hypertrophy, with muscle growth, is very different, because sometimes we're like, I don't know, like, I can see my muscle working when I'm exercising it, but afterwards, is it really more than 2 months ago? Or is my body really changing? It can often be difficult, especially if we do have a bit more of, like, a little bit of body fat covering it up. So yeah, be clear on your goal. And if you're kind of like, hey, I want to do both, I obviously want to get stronger and grow my muscles, or develop more definition. Generally speaking, in any case, it is, in my opinion, worth taking most lifts occasionally to momentary muscular failure. So meaning, still with good form, when can you no longer perform a single other rep? So not with like that hunched back, pulling up that deadlift and, you know, shitting dog position for your squat or so. That's not what I'm talking about. We're talking about good form and momentary muscular failure. So that's why it's not, why we want to emphasize that the failure comes from the muscles and not because of any other reason. Why should you be testing that? Because I mean, some of the research nowadays, or a lot of the research, also says you don't need to always go to muscular failure in order to elicit adaptation. Being close to muscular failure is totally sufficient. Yes, 100%. I 100% believe that and agree with that and think that that is a good philosophy. However, how do you know that you actually are close to muscular failure? Close as in maybe you can do one or maybe two more reps at that particular weight. How do you know that you are actually close to muscular failure if you don't know where your failure is at? If you have never pushed to failure and you just stop because it's hard, that's not the same thing. Feeling like something is hard is very different than knowing how close you are to failure. I have experienced that myself several times. I've experienced that with clients or other people I have trained with several times, when you're like, oh, this is hard. I don't think I can do anymore. I'm going to stop. And then someone else might be like, hey, give it another go. Give it another go. Or really see how far you can go. And then you'd end up doing another 5, 6, 7 reps. And you're like, holy moly, I was so far away from actual muscular failure. So please regularly do check that, more so with isolation exercises than compound lifts. Or if it's compound lifts, see that you can make them as safe as possible. So for instance, instead of testing it on your squat, maybe test it on the leg press machine. Or instead of testing, or like basically something where it's a lot safer than if you fail and then you hurt yourself or you have just a negative mental experience with it. Overall, also, while soreness is not necessarily always a good indicator of a great workout, or we shouldn't always strive for soreness, it can be somewhat of an indication that you pushed yourself on that day. So occasionally, I would say like every couple of weeks, you should feel a little bit sore somewhere. If you never feel sore, then you might be not pushing it hard enough, or you might be just not training the right muscle, activating the right muscle in that for that particular movement. Another indicator, particularly for hypertrophy, is the quote-unquote pump. So when you can like actually feel your blood rushing through that muscle, that sometimes happens more with like arm exercises. It's a bit harder to feel the pump for lower body exercises. But for like things like shoulder and so on, like when you feel that, you know what it means. And I've had a friend of mine ask me, like, I've never felt the pump. I don't even know what that is. And we took her through a few exercises to feel the pump, and she was like, oh my gosh, it hurts so good somehow, but I don't want to do it again. That was just her. But yeah, see if you can quote unquote feel the pump. And then of course, progress pictures do help. Posing like where you actually flex your muscles. And then of course, things like the DEXA scan. I would really advise not placing any emphasis, or actually not even having anything like an InBody or so done, because it can often just mess with your emotions when it comes to your progress, and it's just really inaccurate. So only the DEXA, otherwise no scans, in my opinion. But yeah, moving on. Why should we track calories versus macros? Is it not enough to just track calories? I have lost weight successfully with just tracking calories. So this is a really good point, and I see where you're coming from, because just paying attention to calories feels easier. Sometimes you don't need to play quite as much macro Tetris at times, and you know, you can eat literally whatever, and all you need to monitor is the quantity. However, when it comes to weight loss, we want to make sure it's actually fat loss and not just weight loss. So if we want to maintain as much lean body mass as possible and lose as much fat mass as possible in a weight loss or in a calorie deficit, strength training and paying attention to protein are the two most effective ways to do so. So that is why we advise all our clients to track calories and protein. If you want to pay particular attention to carbs and fats or not, that is a lot, we're a lot more flexible with that, because it's really not that important when it comes to fat loss overall. But we can fine-tune a lot of things by still paying attention to that. So firstly, we can make sure that there are fewer weight fluctuations. For instance, if one day you consume 80 grams of carbs and 80 grams of fats, and then the next day you consume 180 grams of carbs and 36 grams of fats, your weight is going to be different, not because you gained or lost any weight from one day to another, but because you retain more water, not in a negative way. Your body simply draws in more water, holds onto more water when you eat more carbs. So if we're keeping our carb levels steadier, we're going to have less or fewer weight fluctuations. The other reason why we are big on tracking protein, but also carbs or fiber to an extent anyway, not with all clients all the time, but sometimes, is for satiation. Protein 100%, like if you just lose weight with just paying attention to calories, not paying attention to protein, you are potentially going to feel a lot hungrier than if you always make sure you get the right amount of protein and the right amount of fiber as well. And then if we give a particular fat target, that can help a lot with regards to hormonal health, just making sure that we're potentially like restoring a period, or you know, if there's any other sort of issues in relation to that. So yeah, that would be the main reasons. I have another 4 questions. I don't know how much more I want to do here, or if I should split it up. Let's do one more, I guess. Let me select which one. I said the other travel one. I wish I could do this like if this was a live thing and I could ask you guys what you want to listen to. How do you stay motivated, blah, blah, blah. Okay, no. And let's do the travel one, since I already teased it, I guess. I do so great when I'm in my routine and regular environment, but I really find myself struggling with regular travel for work and personally. I know you travel a lot. What advice or tips do you have when it comes to routine or planning when traveling? So I think having some non-negotiables is really helpful. And I think I've spoken about this before, that I kind of bucket my habits into different categories. First one being absolute non-negotiables, and that might be things like 8,000 to 10,000 steps. I would say like probably 355 days out of the year, I get that. Another non-negotiable or other non-negotiables would be 4 days a week, at least 45 minutes to 60 minutes of some sort of exercise, like intentional exercise. Another non-negotiable would be 7 to 8 hours of sleep opportunity, if I can help it. On that front, I would say probably, like, again, also because of travel and red eye flights and whatnot, sometimes there's just no other flights available than at a particular time. But I would say maybe 345 days of the year, I manage to allow myself 8 hours of sleep opportunity. Then other things that are super important for me when I travel, taking my supplements with me. I'm generally, like, normally I would say supplements are, you know, the little extra 1% thing that can help you with health and feeling good and performing well and so on. But when you're traveling, that percentage actually increases because your food quality decreases and your stress increases. So this is the worst time to not be taking your supplements with you. On top of that, you might actually think about adding in a green supplement or a fiber supplement to help you stay a little bit more regular. On top of that, also limiting meals out if possible. So, of course, I usually look for Airbnbs where I can also prepare some of my own meals, or where I at least have a microwave or something to boil water. And I try to mostly limit it to one actual meal out per day if I can help it. Mind you, on travel days, like, for instance, with Brazil, on the way there, that worked very well. On the way back, I, of course, couldn't prepare my meals to take with me on the plane. So I made sure that as soon as I arrived at the airport, I looked around the stores if they had anything that was decent enough to take on the plane with me. And they actually did. They had some grilled chicken and awesome vegetables. I was super happy because the alternative would have been a really shitty sandwich on that flight. So, yeah, but in this case, in this person's case, it might be that work meals are like lunch and dinner are sort of prerequisites. So what do we do then? Then I would say just try to keep your breakfast really light with a protein shake and some fruit, maybe for fiber and protein, obviously, or just a coffee and protein shake, and then saving more calories for your lunch and your dinner on, and there also really making sure you're limiting, since particularly if it's a prolonged period of time, if it's like one day away, you know, that's fine once in a month. But if you are traveling like literally once a week or so, and it is work travel, it's obviously not super enjoyable. So you don't need to think like, oh, what do I crave? You just think, what is a meal high in protein, low in fat, that I can track reasonably easy, maybe has some vegetables with it. But apart from that, even if you don't have a vehicle for work travels that allows you to go and find good grocery stores or restaurants, or you just don't have the time for it, nowadays we're so lucky with things like Uber Eats, even Uber grocery deliveries. I have successfully multiple times had groceries delivered to a hotel when I was like, oh crap, I only have 45 minutes. There is no convenience stores. There's no 7-Elevens, nothing around. Anywhere nearby, I could take an Uber to a grocery store, which would of course take longer. There is no public transportation. What do I do? And yeah, Uber groceries or Uber delivery, whatever it's called, so convenient. But I think it's also a lot of mindset thing, right? Even though you are out of your routines, try to see it as something positive. Once, like, I guess this is tying back really nicely to the point I was making in the beginning, in the sense of it's a challenge, but it's actually a challenge that's helping you practice flexibility and become even better at your skills. So instead of looking at it as something negative that's potentially holding you back or that's making things harder for you, this is an opportunity to practice flexibility, to see how good your skills are actually when it comes to estimating. I will also say, if you're really dedicated, there are some awesome foldable travel scales that I have recommended to many clients. I don't often use them, but I have clients that use them every time that they eat out, and they love it. Like, they really love it. They love not having to estimate and even having that sense of control, I guess, when they travel for work particularly. But yeah, if you enjoyed this Q&A, please let me know. Please leave me a comment, or again, share it on your social media, because then I might do another Q&A at some point in the future. And just generally, I'm really curious if you're enjoying these solo episodes or guest episodes more, or if you love the mixture, if you love the Monday motivation ones. What do you guys want to hear? Because I want to give you more of what you actually enjoy. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. Any follow-up questions, don't hesitate to contact me. Have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, or share the episode on social. Very much appreciated. You can also follow us on Instagram at Nutrition Coaching and Life, or head to our website, www.nutritioncoachingandlife.com. where we provide more valuable content. Have a wonderful day. Now go out and work on your best self.